Liveline on RTE Radio 1 with Kia. Discover our 2-to-1 offers at your local Kia dealer. For more, log on to kia.com.
1850 715 815.
Hello, good afternoon, and you're very welcome to Liveline. And Joe at rt.ie, and if you are contacting us online, it's the same email, and it's 51551 is the text. And online gambling is the topic that Owen wants to raise. Owen, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Joe.
You have, well, tell your own story, beginning with, I have, as your email said, I have a severe gambling addiction.
Yes, so Joe, I have been fighting this disease for about 12 years now. It started off as recreational enjoyment. When I was younger, I was introduced to it. The Grand National was on one Saturday afternoon, and I was on my lunch break. And I was told, you know, exactly how to put on a bet, basically, in very simple terms. I was told to pick a number and put the name down on the slip, and of course, the horse won, and I just had never, ever felt the feeling that I got by seeing that horse cross that line. And I suppose from that moment on, I probably became totally addicted to the buzz of gambling. And I suppose, you know, for the first 1-2 years, it was in control. And then things slowly but surely started to become more progressive, and my behaviour started to change. I started to become totally consumed by it. Initially, it was all going into the bookie shops physically, and then I decided to set up an online account, and then that's when things really started to spiral out of control. I suppose I was using my own money at the start, but then obviously when that had run out, I was resorting to, you know, other avenues of how to get my money and to feed this awful habit and addiction that is gambling. And look, you know, gambling has taken me to places, Joe, where I never thought I would ever go. And it just has totally preoccupied my life for 12 years. It's dominated and dictated how I should live. And, you know, I've missed out on holidays. I've missed out on events. I've sat in dark rooms. I've been in bookie shops till the very last race with a small amount of money after losing a salary in an hour, convincing myself that, you know, I'm going to win everything back and everything is going to be okay. So you can imagine, you know, the feeling for somebody going through that. It's absolutely horrific. You know, as I said, it's taken me to places where I never thought I could physically go. You know, the things that
you mean that in a bad way.
I mean it in a negative way. Bad
in a negative way.
Absolutely.
Okay. In the last few months, what happened? You, all the advertising. I think there's about 30 different online gambling companies now available in Ireland, if not more. But they all say, "Please gamble responsibly," and a lot of them offer a system where you can block yourself in your saner moments. You can go onto the website and block yourself from going back into a gambling, an online gambling platform. Yeah. And is that what you did? And why did you do it?
Yeah, look, I suppose the last couple of months, I've really seen the addiction really take a hold of me and totally consume me again. You know, going back to the isolation, sitting in my room on my own, affecting my work life. And look, I've lost 15,000 in the last four months. We don't need to name the gambling establishment, but basically, I was online with this company, and I asked them in July, you know, to close my account permanently, with never to be able to have the ability to access it again.
Okay.
And they said they were going to do that, and within an hour, I was able to access it again. And look, you know, they can make up their own reasoning why they gave me access back to it. If somebody tells you that they are going to close an account with you never to have access to it again, surely the responsibility is on them to make sure that happens. And, you know, they've come back and said to me that, you know, you need to be responsible and that this is reversible and all this type of stuff. If you can see that somebody is spending 15,000 Joe and you open an account back up for them an hour later, I mean, is there not some level of responsibility for them to come back to you and say, are you okay? Are you sure these amounts of money that you're spending are okay? Because this is what's happening, you know, and I can give you another example of when, you know, they've no issue taking your money. You can open an account in 2 minutes and they'll take your money straight away. But if you win money from this gambling establishment or company, whoever they are, and they ask you, you know, if you've got a win in their account and there's money there that you want to take out, the process that they put you through to try and withdraw that money, you know, proof of bank statements, proof of address, driver's license, passport. But when they want to take your money, they don't require you to give anything. Do you see my point?
Yeah. Well, have you tried any of these web features, GamStop or GamBan?
So
where,
I was.
Where you basically enroll in either one of these, which states categorically you do not want, it does not, it says to the gambling companies, please do not deal with this person. And remember, the gambling companies say we will take every precaution. We want people to have fun, not to have their lives immiserated the way you're describing your life immiserated.
I haven't, to be honest, Joe. And I think it's important to talk about, you know, the friends and the family members that are on this journey with somebody who's suffering with this addiction. Because,
Where did the money come from, by the way?
Well, I've a very good job, you know, and I've managed to hold it down. How I don't know, Joe, but I have, and I suppose that's one positive to look at through all of this. But you know, the problematic gambler is the impact it has on people's lives around them is massive, and it's not easy for them to go through and look at somebody that they love who's going through this addiction and. They're the real heroes in it as much as the person who's going through it.
And how did your family help you?
Well, Joe, I've been in three different treatment centres over different periods of time. And the first time, I suppose, I wasn't mature enough, and I can openly and honestly say that. The second time, I went to a very well-known treatment centre in the Dublin area, and the treatment that they gave me was second to none. Okay. But gambling is not looked at the same way alcohol and the same way drugs are looked at.
Because it can be hidden.
It's hidden. And look, at the best way to explain that to you is, Joe, is I have gone in after losing my salary in an hour and still I can put the face on to my parents as if nothing is wrong.
Yeah.
At least with an alcoholic, Joe, you can smell alcohol. Or if somebody's on drugs, you can see that they're on drugs. With gambling, it's just so hidden and it's insidious and it just creeps up. And, you know, gambling establishments, if you look at it, I'm into my sports, Joe, you know, and if I watch a golf tournament on Sky Sports, the amount of gambling ads that come on, that sets me off. And there's plenty of people out there that can identify with that it's just wrong that the way they are being allowed to advertise this and put it in people's faces. Because the reality of it is, Joe, is that people are, the gambling establishments are relying on somebody like me, a problematic gambler who goes in and loses huge sums of money. Whereas somebody who goes and puts €10 on and walks out of the shop or leaves their online account, that's fine. They're the ones that aren't paying, you know, the big establishments, companies.
But
wages,
you know what the gambling companies will say? Personal responsibility. No one dragged you online. No one dragged you into the shop.
It's a fair point. I absolutely understand where you're coming from. But I think that more has to be done to protect the vulnerable like myself.
Okay. Now, there are, just to come, and by the way, the company that you're referring to, we know the name of it. We've been on to them this morning. We cannot, the phones are not on, are ringing out. We cannot get a reply. So, and we can't get a reply to our emails at this stage, but they're a big company. But they are not, just to be clear at this stage, but they are not Paddy Power, which is the one which is branded as this incredible Irish success story. 250 shops here, 350 physical shops in the UK. Bought Betfair. Yes, they bought a Tombola company. Now brand themselves as Flutter, operating in a lot of territories. Massive online presence. Now, what and this is in relation to two systems that people use to try and stop them gambling. It's called Gamban and GamStop. Now, what hasn't been reported in this country is that one of Paddy Power's companies called Sky Vegas, which is an online casino, offered free bets to recovering addicts during the industry's annual Safer Gambling Week recently.
Well, I'm not surprised to hear that in the slightest. And you know what, Joe? This particular company that I'm having an ongoing issue with, they enticed me with 49 free bets in that period of time from when I initially asked in July up until about a week and a half, 2 weeks ago.
Now, this incident, just in fairness to Paddy Power, let me explain, and you're not stopping me, you're not stopping me on, but it's interesting, your guffaw there, you weren't surprised, that's your point. But anyway, the UK Gambling Commission, we don't have one, is investigating the incident, which has emerged in the same week that Sky Vegas' parent company, Flutter, also known as Paddy Power, boasted of its improved safer gambling measures. The incident for which Sky Betting and Gaming has apologised meant people who had voluntarily barred themselves from playing slots and online games such as roulette received promotional emails. One email sent on Tuesday, the Tuesday of Safer Gambling Week, one email sent on Tuesday carried the subject line, "Take a peek at what your mystery bonus is. Here at Sky Vegas, we love the unexpected." That's right. Simply opt in, spend a fiver and claim your 100 free spins. The best part, whatever you win is yours to keep. Surely that's self-evident. Whatever you win is yours to keep. That's the fun in fair. The promotional message featured graphics of slot machines and the slogan, "Entertainment like no other." The messages from Paddy Power, from Flutter, from one of Ireland's most successful companies and run by some of Ireland's most lauded top people, as they're called in the Sunday papers, the messages were sent to people who had opted out of receiving direct marketing. They also went to recovering gambling addicts who had signed up to self-exclude themselves from online casinos and sports betting sites. It gets even more interesting as we move along here. Apparently, over 200,000 people signed up to the industry-wide self-exclusion scheme GamStop after a 25% surge in gambling, online gambling during the pandemic. And I'm sure Sky Betting and Gaming, owned by Paddy Power, has breached these licence terms before. In 2018, it was fined $1 million for the transgressions, including sending promotional material to 50,000 customers. Recovering addicts said the messages inviting them to gamble in order to receive bonuses put them at the risk of relapse. Now, I'll do more now. We put this to Paddy Power because it hasn't been reported in the Irish media, and they are based in Ireland. That's where the name comes from. That's where it began, and that's where not all the board, but a lot of the board originally came from. It's spreading far and wide now because they're getting bigger and bigger, and they're worth billions at this stage, billions. This is a statement from Paddy Power calling themselves Flutter, which they're entitled to do. And it comes from Conor Grant. "I would like to sincerely apologise to all those," this is the statement they've just given to Liveline the last 10 minutes, "apologise to all those who've been affected by the recent issue at Sky Vegas, whereby a number of people were mistakenly sent promotional communications. I want to assure you that we're doing everything we can to get to the bottom of how this happened. We are conducting a full investigation into what went wrong, in particular so that we can ensure that it doesn't happen again. As soon as the error was identified," by gamblers, by the way, "it was notified to the Gambling Commission and we will keep them informed as our investigations progress." You've no option but to keep the Gambling Commission informed in the UK. That's why they have one. We don't. "Sky Vegas And indeed, all our brands, Sky Vegas, as you say, as I say, is a Paddy Power brand, Flutter brand. Sky Vegas and indeed all our brands take their responsibility to protect customers extremely seriously. Safer gambling is our number one focus. And while we haven't always got everything right, we are determined to do as much as we can to protect those who may be at risk. I recognise that on this occasion, we have let many people down. And for that, I am truly sorry, which is a fair statement. They say they're truly sorry. But anyway, why now your company hasn't got back to us yet, Owen?
I think on that point, you know, I think actions speak louder than words, and anybody can come out and say sorry and apologise. I think the thing that you have to look at with that point is how many lives are they after actively impacting and bringing back into a dark place in the middle of a pandemic when things are dark enough at the moment, Joe? That would be my answer to that. Because relapse is something that's very much real in the addiction world. And I would love to know the amount of people, if we could get the figures, of course we won't, but I would love to know how many people that has really impacted and has put them back in active addiction. Because that's the scary thing. And the thing we need to talk about here as well is gambling will take people's lives. There's no if or but about that. I've seen it. I've been in GA rooms. I know exactly what this disease will do. So I just want people to look at it differently. I want it to be talked about more openly, and I want the people who are enabling it to take it more seriously and, you know, to put a human element into the level of service that they deliver, because they don't care about you in the slightest. That's my personal take on it, because I had to actually, to get any sort of traction with this company that I'm dealing with at the moment, I had to go to the top level to get interaction, and that's how I got a response. And the person who that was then handed down to hasn't even engaged with me 2 weeks later after multiple emails showing them proof that I had actually confirmed with my current issue that I had asked for my account to be closed and to be never given the ability to access it again. Yet an hour later, I had the ability to open it up again. So, you know, it's action. It's action, okay, and it's sticking to your guns.
I primarily want to find out, and you, Owen, if you could help people, how did you go about stopping this? Sorry, curtailing, or even let's say in terms of addiction, pausing this addiction. You said you had good words for an addiction centre in Dublin, but is there anything? Is there anything when you're tempted to slip, to relapse or whatever, is there anything that comes into your head that tries to push it in the other direction and succeeds?
Look, I think, the key things to do are something that I've been reluctant to do, which I've made the decision to do now, is if you have access to money, you need to hand it over to somebody who you trust and to take away the ammunition, because if you have the ammunition, you're going to fire the gun. That's a common term that's used, okay? And in order to enable you to stop, you need to hand over the finances, because then you can't go and gamble, essentially. And I think then you need to get help. You need to go to whatever works for you. There's multiple agencies out there that help with gambling addiction. And if you feel like you're totally overwhelmed, you know, there's treatment centres that are now really well equipped to deal with it. So, and I think talking is the most important thing. You know, it's just not talked about enough. It's not in the same kind of... I think alcohol and drugs and other addictions are spoken a little bit more vocally, whereas gambling isn't. So I would just like to see it more focus on it, because there is a lot of people out there suffering with it.
Okay. Are you still accessing help, Owen?
So I'm actually starting a new treatment on Monday, which I'm very excited about. And it's a new avenue that I'm going to explore. And I'm hopeful that something positive will come from it, Joe, and that I can abstain from gambling. Because, look, I'm not getting any younger. I'm in my 30s and, you know, I haven't got any assets. I have no money. It's taken everything from me. And the only thing I have is you know, the shoes on my feet and the head, the roof under my head. So I just want to get my life back.
And your parents have been astonishing.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, just, you know, they're obviously tired of seeing this issue being around for 12 years, but they just want to see their son get well, get his life back, perform to the best ability that he can without putting any added pressure on him, and just seeing me succeed and grow as a person. And they just don't want, they don't want to see me struggling anymore. You know, they want to see me developing. They don't want to see me in pain, suffering, which I have been for 12 years as a result of this horrible addiction called gambling.
There'll come a stage where some companies have decided that if they don't reply to our requests for information, that that means legally we can't talk about them. But we will do our utmost to get a response from this gambling company, and to the exact point you raised about that you were you asked the company to close your account. You managed to get access back onto it, and they continually enticed you back with free bets. Okay, Pat Murphy. Pat, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Joe, and all the listeners on it. Lovely hearing you, talking to you again.
Go ahead, your point please, Pat. You're listening
to... Well, I think this gambling is a very, very serious situation on it. And I do not think that these people that are advertised should be allowed to advertise on the national television and radio because of the damage that it can do to individuals like that man. And we don't know how many people have gone into serious situations health-wise because of the gambling, but I would think there's quite a few. And I, the way they have these promotions and giving people free bets and everything else.
But most of them, now I'll try and clarify the position of RTE about gambling ads. And but I know, for example, a whole slew of newspapers in great difficulty because of the pandemic, especially the tabloids, one of their main advertisers is the National Lottery. One week I counted 7 pages on a Friday in a tabloid newspaper from the National Lottery. 7 pages. So you can imagine the importance. But anyway, National Lottery also sponsor the National Media Awards, which must be a joke. But anyway, it's true.
Just talking about the National Lottery, there's hardly a man going to spend his week's salary in a couple of hours on the National Lottery.
The scratch cards can be addictive. The scratch cards can be addictive. Take your point. Okay, but I'm not changing the subject, Pat. It is gambling. The National Lottery is gambling.
It is gambling. There's different types of gambling.
And you've a better chance of winning. This is what all the bookies will tell you. You have a better chance of winning on the horses than you have in the National Lottery. Where do you see the ads? Tell me, because I don't.
I see them on television when I watch television and that on it. But I mean, talking about the National Lottery, there's a bit of a mystery as to why this 9 million hasn't been won yet on it. I see there's no need.
There's no conspiracy. No investigation. It's a lottery. Seriously,
your chances.
You have a better chance of finding a winning lottery ticket than buying a winning lottery ticket. But anyway, as you say, you don't want to go down there. Now, we're told that RTE are going to ban the use of credit card payments methods for betting in shops and online. Hang on. Yeah. Credit card betting during live sport to be banned, but that doesn't necessarily refer to television.
No.
We'd find out from RT what their position is on gambling and what they do. But then again, Pat, online, you put on your YouTube, you Google something or whatever, and up comes an ad for a betting company. You put on a sports, look for Ronaldo's top 10 goals on YouTube, and up comes an ad for a betting company.
Well, Joe, I don't think they should be allowed to advertise such products because they are dangerous for the community. Now, I don't gamble at all. When I was very young, I gambled once a year for the Grand National.
Just to be clear as well, gambling can be fun. Like fellas or women or group going out to the dogs or horse racing. People having on, and they do it in Cheltenham, having a lunch, and there's someone taking bets there, and it's a great bit of crack. What we're talking about today is specifically in terms of gambling, problem gamblers who say to the gambling companies, I want to be blocked. And there are methods that the gambling companies say, I want to be blocked. And I read out the story about Paddy Power and Sky Vegas, where they specifically targeted people who had been blocked during Safer Gambling Week and offered them free bets. Today we're talking about what happens when your gambling problem is so serious that one of the things you do in your saner moment is get onto these gambling companies and say, please block me. What happens there? That is the sting today. Cormac, good afternoon.
How are you, Joe? How's things?
Good, yeah. Your point, please, Cormac. You're listening to Owen.
Well, in response to the other chap you had on there a few moments ago, I was I'm probably a few years ahead of him in terms of recovery and leaving all that behind. My experience, the problem is with the online gambling. You can just log on to any online betting, set up your account. And again, when you try to shut it down, you can shut it down for a week. You can actually choose these a month, three months, 6 months. When it comes to actually deleting your account full stop, it does take a lot of effort, you know.
Okay.
And what I found was, this is how I got in touch with the show, to any people out there experiencing problems or recurring, falling off the wagon, if you like, guess Gam stop.
Okay,
Gam ban.
Gam ban, yeah.
It's a piece of software.
Okay.
You purchase it for €30 per annum.
Okay.
Put it on all your devices. If you use your tablet, your laptop, your phone, and it bans any gambling worldwide. You couldn't even buy a line for the lottery. It sees that as gambling.
Yeah, of course.
Do you know what I mean?
Because it is.
It is. Yeah.
Gam stop. There's Gam
ban.
What is Gam stop? Do you know? Can we get that here?
No, you can't. That's only available in the UK.
Okay, because they have a gambling commission. We don't.
There's no regulation, Joe. I was listening to the chap you had on. I feel his pain. I was down that road as well. The fact that you're not going in with €100 and going into a bookies, it's not tangible, if you like. When you see all the zeros on your phone, you don't feel you're wasting hundreds and thousands, you know, until your bank account's cleared out, the mortgage is spent, etc., etc., and then you go, Jesus, what have I done? You know, it's not real when it's on the phone.
Owen, you want to come back in?
Sorry to cut across there. No, I completely agree with what that guy is saying.
Cormac, yeah.
Cormac, you know, because it's like Monopoly money, you know, it's not real. At least when you're physically in a betting shop, you have the cash in your hand. You kind of have more control. Well, you don't have any control if you're a compulsive gambler. That's the reality. But if you're online, the money is just going and it's disappearing and it's not real. It doesn't feel real. It's just completely different. There's no comparison.
Okay, Cormac, you're doing good now.
Yeah, I was reoccurring and I'd stop and then I'd wait a few months and then I'd go back and I'd open an account with another online betting company. Again, I think with a little bit of research I did, I think there's 2,500 online betting companies.
Wow.
You know,
wow.
You'll never block yourself from all of them. So,
Gam ban. Okay.
It's a blocking software, and you can put it on all your devices and block every gambling site worldwide.
And have you done this, Karma?
Oh, I've done it, yeah, absolutely. I don't do the lotto, but with this 19 million, I said, geez, I might as well buy a few lines. I went to buy a few lines, and it blocked me off the lotto.
And are you glad?
I'm totally glad, yeah. She did a couple of lines, but...
But you know what your odds are.
Well, 11 million to 1, I think.
Yeah, 10.737 million to 1, and you would have to have a 50-50 chance. Let me try and dig these facts up because I wrote them down earlier on. To have a 50-50 chance of winning the jackpot. You would have to buy 10 million euros. You would have to spend, 10,737,580 euro to have a 50-50 chance of winning the jackpot.
Right, I think I'll park that, though.
Okay. Okay, okay. Well, anyway, people do like the lotto and they do like the scratch cards, and it is endorsed by the government. It was set up by the government to build the children's hospital. Whatever happened to that? It's now owned by a Canadian teacher's pension fund. That's fine. And the argument, as you know, when you raise the issue about the lotto is good causes, good causes, good causes. Okay, Cormac, Pat Murphy, Owen. Cormac, stay well. Owen, stay well. You're both of you are in a good place, thank God. And a reminder, Cormac, to people who have got gambling addictions, there is help available. You can get through this. You can come out the other side, can't you, Cormac? There are better days ahead if you feel you were Cormac, sorry.
Yeah, get Gamban, put it on your phone, do it now.
Okay. Joe at RT.ie.
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815. Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.
We are talking today, thanks to a call from Owen, about, we've done it so many times, about problem gambling. And we know the vast majority of people knock a bit of crack out of gambling. But when it becomes serious, it can be deadly serious in every sense of the word. But Owen's point was that he took up an offer, which is available on all, it seems, the gambling sites now, to try and block yourself from that site. And he blocked himself from the site, and then he started getting requests from them and also getting free bets from them. So that's raising the whole issue about how you block yourself from these sites. And then that raised the issue. By the way, that company was not Paddy Power. But this company that we then spoke about, because it's in the public domain, though you won't read about it in Ireland for some reason, but you might hear about it now, that Sky Betting, which is owned by Paddy Power, owned by Flutter. They have a few different nomenclatures at this stage for various, I presume, industry reasons. And during Safer Gambling Week, the online platform owned by Paddy Power, Flutter, whatever they call themselves at this stage, they sent out messages to people who had blocked themselves from gambling. But they basically sent out messages, and this basically said, opt in, spend a fiver and claim your 100 free spins. This is an online casino. But the best part, whatever you win is yours to keep. That's the fun in fair. And then it went on. This is entertainment like no other. Sky Betting and Gaming, they were the casino is called Sky Vegas, aptly enough. Sky Betting and Gaming has apologised, and we have received now another apology in the last hour or so, 1:33, from Paddy Power, from Conor Grant, Flutter UK and Ireland CEO. We want to sincerely apologise to all those who have been affected by the recent issue with Sky Vegas, etc. And we've let many people down, and for that I am truly sorry. Dennis McGrath, your point, please. Dennis.
Joe, good afternoon. I just listened to Owen there, and I 100% sympathise with him, but I can only speak from my own experiences of online gambling. And I've always found that any time I went to open an account or went live with an account,
okay,
they have what's called KYC, which is Know Your Customer.
Okay.
Where they will insist on you producing documentation to verify who you are.
Okay.
That's point number one. I reckon they need to up the age limit of allowing people to have an online account. I think I think the first mistake a lot of people make when it comes to gambling is that they concentrate on across-the-board gambling, so they're into everything. I think that's very dangerous. Mm-hmm. I also think that he made a comment about having problems getting money if he has a win, whatever the case may be. I've never had any issues whatsoever with withdrawals. They're normally back in my account within by the time I'm off, I hit the button. As far as I'd be concerned,
yeah,
I'm probably a lot older than and own, and I have basically learned to manage.
Okay.
Manage my gambling.
And you can stop if you want to stop.
Absolutely.
Okay. Now, when you say that this thing of, of know your customer, is that to do with money laundering legislation, I wonder? Where you have to give ID and, you know, when you go into a bank now.
Absolutely.
Yeah, yeah.
Absolutely, because that's exactly why they want to know who they're dealing with.
Yeah.
And they want to know, like, that they're not involved in what you've just described. That, you know, people can be used, as we've seen in the papers recently, people get sucked into this whole scenario and they wash money through their accounts.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, and, you gamble for fun, do you, Dennis? Is that
no,
your point?
No, absolutely not. To me, it's a business,
okay,
and it's serious. It's not for fun.
And have
it
you?
It can't be for fun. If you,
okay,
Joe, if you've been involved in business. Paddy Power, sorry, I mentioned the company, right? Any company.
Yeah.
They run it as a business.
Yeah.
So why wouldn't you run it as a business?
Because
In other words, putting in sort of business strategies.
Yeah, I agree. And we talk about that in a second. But the reason they're running it as a business and a growing business and an expanding business is because it's a profitable business.
Correct.
Because they win.
Correct.
But you say you can beat them.
No. You can never beat the house.
But do
you
see,
never beat the house.
Do you see gambling as an income stream in your life?
Yes.
And has it been an income stream?
Yes.
And how have you used algorithms or are you just...
I watch racing 24. I only concentrate on racing.
Oh, okay, which...
I don't get involved. I wouldn't... know anything about any other sport.
Okay, and racing is not a game of chance. It's a game of skill and form and conditions and jockeys and...
It's all of that. There's no magic bullet.
Yeah, I know that.
But if you're going to place a bet, and 9 times out of 10, if you ask anybody why they placed the bet on that particular horse,
yeah,
they will not give you a logical...
Right. They say they like the name of the horse, they like the name of the jockey, they like the colours of the outfit, they like the look of the horse.
Yes.
Whereas you take a completely different tack because you're serious.
Because it's very simple. If you're going to place a bet on a horse, you need to know the form of the race and you need to know the form of the horses in the race.
Yes.
And to allow you to get to that level, you need to be watching racing 24/7.
Sounds like a job.
Yes. Now you've hit the nail on the head. It's not leisure.
And do you go to the track?
No. No.
But how can you get you're saying you're doing it from previous performance, but do you not like to see a horse close up, the hind of a horse, the gait of the horse?
No.
Okay. Okay.
Because I'm not qualified to comment on things like that.
And have you bet the house when it comes to horse racing?
I've done very well. I've had my moments in the sun. I've also been involved in syndication of horses.
Okay.
And I've seen it from the other side.
But you must knock some crack out of it, Dennis.
I'm passionate about the sport.
Yeah, that's cool. That's totally...
Gambling is part of the overall sport.
Okay,
I can tune into Tattersall's when the sales come on to see the horses going through the ring.
Yeah, good man. Yeah.
So you know, I can read up on all the people who are involved in the industry.
You're a student.
I'm probably a nerd when it comes to horse racing.
Well, that's brilliant. That's brilliant.
But it's not easy.
Okay.
It's not easy, and it never was, and it never will be. And if you think walking in and out of bookie shops is the golden highway, then you're grossly mistaken.
You're on a cul-de-sac.
And they will clean you.
Do you gamble? Would you buy lotto tickets? Would you buy scratch cards? Why not?
No. No, because you have to be disciplined.
Okay.
You have to decide on what you enjoy, what's your passion.
Well, horse racing for you is skill. In terms of who you gamble on, but the lotto was chance, isn't it?
Yes. Yes, okay. Joe.
Okay, stay there, Dennis. Well, Liam, your grandfather is a bookmaker, or was. Go ahead, Liam.
Yeah, Joe, one of the main issues that I see is, I agree with all your callers today, but one of the big things is this is being marked on the show today as a hidden problem. It's not a hidden problem. Okay. I know from punters who come in that you will know who the problem gamblers are. There's no doubt big multinational gambling companies who aren't making millions, mm-hmm. they're making billions. They know who are the winners and who are the losers. And in fact, if you actually win, they will ban you. I think realistically, the sports betting isn't the biggest gambling.
Okay.
The biggest area of problem gambling is these online casino games that are available 24/7. And what we've seen now is when you're able to look at sport 24/7 all over the world, people are able to bet on things they mightn't in other jurisdictions where they mightn't have a clue about.
Mm-hmm.
So it's real. Like, we're going to see some new laws being brought in. James Brown, the minister in the Department of Justice, has been doing Trojan work on new gambling laws and reforms, and there's going to be safeguards for punters there. But ultimately, it's these 24-hour betting things that are causing the biggest problems, and it's not the small independent bookmakers, it's the big corporations.
And Liam, this, which is the sting of what we're saying today in terms of the difference, what happens when you try to block yourself from the gambling sites? Because we've two examples, one from Paddy Power, one from another company, which we're going to name come head or high water, they don't come back to us in fairness. Because Paddy Power's name, because the Paddy Power issued a statement saying we sincerely apologise. They've fessed up to doing this, where people thought they had knocked themselves off the sites. Instead, they were getting promotional material from the Paddy Power case during, say, for Gambling Week, offering free bets and free spins on the online casino. And in the other company, this man Owen, as you heard, he'd lost 15 grand in the space of 5 weeks, tried to block himself, but then he kept getting free bets off this company. So is it just the online gambling at this stage? We're given COVID.
Well, we have to just remember the new gambling bill will be coming into effect next year, and bans free first-time bets for all, and it puts in place a new gambling.
I can't wait for that.
And it also puts in place a new gambling regulator with €20 million.
Can I just want to have you there, Liam? Can I set me alarm for that law? Because it'll be a long time coming. How long has that been coming in this country?
To be quite honest, I don't know. Yeah, I know there has been gambling laws in. The first one came
have
in
we a gambling,
1931,
have we a gambling,
and then there was changes in 2015.
Have we a gambling commission that people had to complain to the UK gambling commission when Paddy Power was caught?
There was a general scheme in 2013, but it never kind of materialised into legislation. But there will be a new regulator that is going to be set up.
Okay, well, he or she come quickly with powers, please. Not Paddy Powers, real powers. Willie, good afternoon. Thanks, Liam. Willie, your point, please.
Joe, just on a different angle, Joe.
Yeah, welcome.
Yeah, when you go into a bookie office, Joe, you know something, you never see a clock on a wall.
Hmm.
You don't see a clock, Joe. There's no signs up saying, look, careful with your money. And the girl don't say to you, she knows you. And the person behind the counter don't say to you, they know you well. Like, you know, look, you're not in a great job. Look, you're spending too much. Look, careful. Like, you know, none of that. They just keep taking the money, Joe. But there's no clock. Just be fine, Joe. There's no clock in any bookie office you go into. I swear, you don't see a clock on the wall. There's plenty of screens there to confuse you, Joe.
Okay.
You know.
But what about Dennis? Have you heard Dennis McGrath there earlier on? He's the man who kept saying in such a distinctive way, no, no, no. And when I was asking, is Dennis still there? But
yeah,
Dennis, Dennis, check me if I'm wrong. Dennis is saying, on the one hand, you can be a skilled, studious, serious gambler like me, who studies horses and form and skill and jockeys and ability and grounds and weather and all this kind of courses, okay? On the other hand, you can be a poser who rambles into the bookies thinking he's going to win money in the bookies. And Dennis's point is, you will never, if you're just doing it for fun, or without putting skill into it, and a lot of gambling is just chance, not skill, you will never win. What do you think of that point, Willie, that those who go into the bookies in the main don't win?
you have to be lucky, Joe. You could pick out a horse, Joe, as you said yourself, the way like they call it, you might look at the horses. The name, it might get an inkling, Joe. Sometimes you get an inkling.
But Dennis, you're saying that's nonsense, aren't you?
No, Joe, the point I'm making is they're all short-time fixes. They're sort of money for pints syndrome, right?
Yeah.
I'm talking about if you want to, with just for argument's sake, pick a figure, 250 quid a week, just a figure like that. You try and earn 250 quid a week as a minimum.
Okay.
On a consistent basis, you will need to be on your mettle and know what you're doing to achieve that. You might walk into one of the bookie shops and be lucky, as that gentleman said, and have, you know, but I guarantee you, the chap who wins that money will walk out of there with no money.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because he will basically have a mindset that, well, look at this, I'm just after winning 300 quid. It might be my lucky day. And he will stay in that shop and he will work through that 300 quid. Because it's just a mindset, Joe.
Okay.
That's all I'm saying.
Okay, point well made. Thanks indeed, Dennis McGrann and me and Willie and Waterford. Joe at RT.ie.
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815. Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.
RTE's Stephen, a gambling, the carriage of gambling advertising is permitted by the BAI, Broadcasting Authority of Ireland, General's Commercial Communications Code. RTE upholds BAI Commercial Communications Code and abides by the ASAI Code of Standards for Advertising and Marketing in Ireland. All advertisements for gambling services or products on RTE are required to contain a message to encourage responsible gambling and to direct people to a source of information about gambling support. RTE regularly covers gambling and related issues across its television, radio and online services, including programmes such as the one you are now listening to. That's from RTE. I think it's the anniversary is when, Terry? How many years ago is it?
1942, November 1942.
So that's, what, 89 years ago?
No, it wouldn't be 89, it'd be 79, wouldn't it?
79, okay. Because I see Joe Duffy was killed 79 years ago this week because he was one of the sailors on the ship, wasn't he? Irish Pine. What relation of yours was on it?
My father, he was third officer William Joseph Connolly.
Okay, tell us what happened to the Irish Pine during the Second World War. The year is 1942, the month is November this week. What happened to the ship?
Well, the ship sailed for Tampa, Florida.
Okay.
To get a cargo of phosphates for Dublin.
Right.
However, she was forced to call to Boston for dry docking and have some necessary repairs carried out in her fuel tanks. The Irish Pine was in contact with his sister ship, the Irish Burr, which was in November the 14th, another company ship, the Irish Burr, which was docking in Boston, and that was the last message ever received from her.
Okay.
She disappeared without trace, and Irish Shipping Limited on December the 5th, 1942, announced in the national newspapers that the Irish Pine was considerably overdue and must be presumed lost.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this was the most tragic loss in Irish maritime history, as 33 men lost their lives, including my father, of course, third officer, William Joseph Connolly.
And what age were you, Terry?
I would be 4.
Okay. And have you any memory of it?
Well, I just have a memory of sitting in the house. You see, remember the sailors, when the men going to sea were away for long periods of time. So it wasn't like a father being in the house all the time.
Okay, I understand that.
My sister was only a couple of months old.
Okay. Well, and you're raising the whole issue again. Why?
Well, I think they were never recognised for what they did.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they were the only service in Ireland, the merchant shipping, that actually were in hostility. Well, you won't say hostilities, but they were involved with the war. I mean, they were the only people that the army wasn't involved or the navy wasn't involved, and there were a number of ships lost as well as the Irish Pine.
But was the tricolour clearly painted on the side of the ship.
There was. It was
more
than that.
It was more than that, actually. Well, tell us.
All the Irish ships had to carry mandatory neutrality insignia during the war. Okay. They had large Irish flags painted on their sides with the word "air" painted in large white lettering alongside these flags. In contrast to the Allied ships sailing, they sailed with lights burning brightly, neutrality's insignia floodlit, and tricolour flying.
So they didn't try and hide themselves?
No, not at all. They made them sure that everybody knew who they were and what they were.
So who sank the Irish Pine?
The Irish Pine was sank by U-Boat 608 under Commandant Strockmeyer.
And what do we know? How long was the U-Boat tracking the Irish Pine?
8 hours.
Oh God!
8 hours.
So they would. So they would have had. They would have known. Surely.
Of course they knew. He was able to. You see, the Irish Pine disappeared without trace, and for 35 years nobody knew what happened there.
Mm-hmm.
Until Frank Ford, who in his book *The Long Watch*, was researching over in London and in Greenwich, and he came across the logboat, the secret logbook of this submarine.
Wow.
And in that
That's incredible. What
happened.
And in the submarine, U-boat, what's the 608?
608.
The captain in his log said on the 15th of November.
I give all the details. He said that the Irish Pine appeared out of a snowstorm in the middle of the night, making zigzags at a very slow speed and steering southwest.
Yeah.
The sea was very rough with rain showers, and the Irish Pine frequently disappeared in the rain squalls.
Okay.
Strockmeyer, having maintained contact all day, made his attack, walking across the bows of the Irish Pine, now almost stopped to get windward of her. It was dark, and he noticed she had two red lights on her fore topmast, meaning she had some engine or steering malfunction.
Okay.
On deck, he noticed four bright lights on the boat. On one deck, it was red, and another green light. He assumed that she had engine trouble and was awaiting the assistance of a patrol vessel. At no stage did he make any reference to neutrality markings on the ship. He fired a torpedo from a distance of 800 metres. It missed passing under the Irish Pine as she pitched and rolled in the heavy seas. He attacked again at 12:14 a.m. with complete success. Mm-hmm. He fired again from a range of 800 metres and reported the target had stopped. The torpedo hit the after part of the ship and she began to settle immediately by the stern. A lifeboat with a very bright light was lowered and the ship became perpendicular and sank stern first in very rough seas in less than 3 minutes. Thus, on Sunday, November the 15th, 1942, ended the life of the Irish Pine and with her the lives of all her crew. Now, it's difficult to believe that Roald Strockmeyer, with such teutonic efficiency, was able to notice so many details in relation to the lights of the ship, her condition, and the weather conditions, but was unable to notice, after following her for 8 hours, her neutrality markings and wonder why she was carrying so many bright lights. Well, you mentioned all that, of course, yeah.
So the U-boat sank the Irish Pine, and many souls were lost.
33.
Wow.
Including three from Kinsale. There was John McCarthy and Patrick Shane, who was living in Dublin at the time, but was also from Kinsale.
33, and you saying it's not the biggest casualty of group? I know Irish people fought in the British Army and that.
Oh, no, I'm talking about the Irish Maritime.
The Irish Maritime, okay.
Yeah.
Okay. And there is a memorial, isn't there?
There is a memorial in Dublin, yeah. It took a long time from the coming to court.
Okay, where is that now?
That's on the Quays.
In Dublin, City Quay in Dublin.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, have the Germans ever apologised?
Well, no.
The German government?
No. Of course, we didn't discover until 35 years later what happened there. So, I mean, that would be, 35, that would be 1979. Now, again, there's another question. Why wasn't there a payment for the loss of the ship, a neutral ship? She wasn't involved in the war at all.
Okay.
the Irish government should have gone after the German government and looked for compensation for the loss of the ship and her crew.
Because the ship was owned by Irish Shipping, which was our state shipping company.
But it was leased by Irish Shipping.
Yeah, well, it was leased up till, and it was our state shipping company up until the...
Yes, it was.
Till it was liquidated in the late 70s, early 80s. James Quinn, by the way, we have a holding statement from the German embassy in Dublin. Thank you for bringing this tragic case to our attention. I will look into the history of it and get back to you with what I find, if you wish. Please understand the embassy cannot comment immediately in time for your programme, but that's understandable. James Quinn, but they call it a tragic case and they look into the history of it. James Quinn, what relation of yours was on the ship?
Well, I had an uncle, John Quinn, and he miraculously missed the boat on the day of the sailing. And it was he that brought me. I went down to Limerick. I had a sailor suit for my first communion. And, of course, that was a novelty. And John brought me on board the Irish Time Pine. Mm-hmm. And I was actually, you could imagine, coming from Thurles, which was the first ship I ever saw in my life. Or mind anything else. And I thought it was huge. And the crew were all very nice to me because, of course, I was in a sailor suit.
Yeah,
and they were impressed by John's little sailor nephew, needless to say. So, in actual fact, he missed the boat and he was terribly lucky. They couldn't find him on the morning. It was like the Spalpeen Farmers. They went looking for people then when the boat was ready to sail.
Well, they know the first place you go when you're looking for a sailor back in the day was the pub.
Yeah, well, that's the place he was, but he wasn't a drinker. He was a religious sort of maniac.
Okay, so they
went... There's plenty of chapels in Limerick.
So they went to the churches
to cater first. And that's where they searched. All the chapels they searched first.
But him missing the ship, the Irish Pine, saved his life.
It did. He always thought that it sank of its own. The cargo used to swell inside those ships.
Yeah.
There was the Irish Oak as well. It broke up outside Limerick somewhere, and its crew were saved simply because it happened so near the city. But he always believed that, and he died without knowing that it was sunk by a torpedo. And it's
that's
very sad.
Yeah.
But you could imagine me going down as a 7-year-old.
And can you?
50 years ago now, but I remember it vividly. I can't remember what I had for my breakfast.
But James,
I remember that vividly.
But the unique thing about you, and I really appreciate this contact, you're probably the only person alive today who remembers being on the Irish Pine.
Yeah, yeah. You know, it was a novelty for me to see a ship, never mind go on it. And John brought me on, and I met the crew members, and they were all terribly nice. I remember that part of it very much. So as a child, you remember people who are nice to you, you know.
And did your uncle, who survived, did he try and find out what happened to his comrades?
No, he never went to sea again.
Oh, wow.
It had a terribly bad effect on his life for the rest of his life. And he lived to be quite old. But he was really shattered by the whole event.
And your point is, James, one of your many strong points is that the ship sank, but up to quite recently, and your uncle, who was due to be on that ship that day, did not know.
And I have a perfect model of it here made by my son.
I see that photograph.
With
it's fantastic.
The flags on it.
But your uncle, who survived by not being aboard, he didn't realise that the Irish Pine was sunk in an act of war.
No, he didn't. He always thought the cargo swelled and broke the ship apart.
Okay, stay with us. Joe at RT.ie.
Talk to Joe on 1850-715-815. Talk to Joe on 1850-715-815.
89 years ago this week, 33 Irishmen by the names of Joe Duffy is one of them, Kevin Cashin, Joe Conway, Joe O'Connor, Patrick Sheen, Sean Ryan, Michael O'Callaghan, James O'Connell, just some of the names, Harry Ward. They perished at sea on an Irish ship working for the Irish state during, as it happened during the Second World War. They were plying their trade and their lifeline trade at that stage. And now everyone thought up to relatively recently that the Irish Pine had perished at sea in bad weather or whatever, cargo becoming it was an open cargo ship. But it was only relatively recently that the survivors, there was no survivors except one, so to speak, who didn't, it was supposed to be aboard that day, but didn't get on. But the families of those killed, and by the way, none of them have ever been found there lying at the bottom of the sea. The families of those who were killed discovered that the ship was actually sunk by a German U-boat, which had tracked the ship for a full 8 hours, even though the ship was covered and bedecked in neutral insignia and was fully lit. So it was hard, it wasn't hiding from anybody. Sorka de Bruin, who was your granduncle, is it? Where was he from?
Yeah, he was from, hi Joe, he was from Ringsend. It's actually my great uncle.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so it would have been my father's mother's uncle who died, and his name was Richard Talbot.
Richard Talbot, Dublin. Joe O'Connor, Dublin. Thomas O'Donoghue, Dublin. Joe Duffy, Dublin. Kevin Cashin, Dublin. Joe Conway, Dublin. Fred Couser, Dublin. Thomas Daly, Dublin. John Nolan, Dublin. And then the rest are Cork, Limerick, Cove, obviously, and Kinsale and Wexford, on maritime location. And what does the family have a memory of your uncle Richard Talbot, who perished?
Well, my dad has a very, very clear memory, Joe. My father's a fantastic storyteller. He's many a story about Ringsend and about his youth and about, you know, the keys and that. And one of the things he told me was that he remembers, he was just a very small child, I think he was only about 6 or 7 maybe, when the Irish Pine, you know, went out on its last voyage, and there was some sort of a party or get-together, and Richard Talbot was there.
Okay.
And he gave my father a 3-penny piece at the time, you know, the old money.
Threepenny piece, yeah, that's the kind
of, yeah. Yeah, and my dad's name is Noel Brown, and he said to my father, he said, "Noly," he said, "I'll see you when I get back." And of course, sadly, you know, he never came back. But my father said, you know, even at this stage in his life, my dad said he often thinks about that and just, you know, thinks, I suppose, quite sadly, I suppose, about what happened and just the fact that he never saw him again. And I think Richard was quite a young man as well.
Yeah, well, it seems a lot of them are very young.
Yeah, yeah.
Very young.
Quite young. Yeah, it's pretty sad, really, you know. And just, I think the fact that it was kind of a party or sort of a get-together for him as well makes it all the more poignant, I think, you know. He was going off in style, probably looking forward to it and thinking it was a great adventure, and he never saw him again, you know.
Okay.
But I think that previous caller there mentioned about the memorial down the Keys.
Yeah.
And I've gone past that, and I always stop and just, you know, just think about him. Obviously, he died long before I was born. But yeah, no, it is. It's sad, you know.
I'm just wondering, was there a Terry? Thanks, Sorka de Bruin, and kind regards to your dad as well. But Terry, was there a memorial this week to mark the anniversary?
Sorry?
Was there a memorial this week at City Quay to mark
the anniversary? Not to my knowledge,
no. Not to my knowledge, okay. So we've been on to the German embassy, so hopefully, they're, as I say, they are looking into this tragic story. And as you say, in that incredible book by Frank Ford, he points out that he discovered... A great piece of detective work. He discovered in a German U-boat commander's log where he admitted sinking the ship.
I felt that they were never recognised, really, you know, for what they did. Patrick Kavanagh wrote a little poem about them 2 months after the ship went down.
Wow.
And it sort of refers to that matter.
Okay.
Will I just read it? Or?
Yeah, read it, yeah. Please.
The Irish Pine, she is harboured in the unknown that we all sail unto, and send no message back, no more than the ship's crew. Vain hopes to be remembered, rebrought you weak, and 2 months gone, forgotten, in hall and field and street.
Well said, well said. Patrick Bent from Wexford also. Patrick Cleary, Wexford. William Connolly, Kinsale. Robert Crichton from Scotland. Michael Cusack from Limerick. Thomas Cusack from Cork. Eamon Dunnett from Galway. Maurice Dooley, Limerick. Peter Fanning, Clara Head, Michael Flynn, Limerick, Alfred Harnett, Cork, John McCarthy, Kinsale, Frank Murphy, Limerick, George O'Brien, Cove, Michael O'Callaghan, Cork, James O'Connell, Cork, Matthew O'Neill, Wexford, Sean Ryan from Limerick, Patrick Sheehan from Kinsale, Stephen Smith from Wexford, Alphonsus Tobin from Limerick, Frank Tracy from Limerick, and Hector Young from Limerick. May they rest in peace, all of those.
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815. Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.
We're talking about the anniversary, which happened this week, of one of the few Irish ships, thankfully, that was sunk as an act of war in the Second World War. It's a neutral ship. As you know, we were neutral, and it was clearly marked, and that was the Irish Pine. But Declan O'Toole wants to remind us of another incident around the same time with the Irish Willow, as the phrase is, a sister ship. Briefly, what happened, Declan?
Hi, Joe. On the 16th of March, 42, the Willow was stopped off Rockall by U-753. Mm-hmm. And the U-boat said, send master and papers. Now, the captain was a British citizen. He was from Belfast, and they thought that wouldn't be wise. Okay. So my grandfather and three others rowed the first officer to the U-boat.
Oh, brilliant.
And they
brilliant.
Exchanged snaps and whiskey, produced the papers, said yeah. the captain was elderly and couldn't make the crossing in an open boat.
Okay.
So the U-boat were sorry they had stopped a neutral ship. And they said, okay, we're waiting for instructions. We're going to fire a flare. If the flare is green, you can go.
Okay.
If the flare is red, you have 5 minutes to get off.
Oh, good God. So up went the green flare.
Up went the green flare,
well
and
done.
On they went.
Well done, well done.
And the same ship then rescued the crew from the Empire Breeze, a British ship,
okay.
Later on in that cruise. You should see a book, Dauntless Courage by Dunmore East. RNLI.
Oh, brilliant.
It recounts the whole
okay.
lot.
Okay, well said, Declan. Well said. Great way to finish. Back again, I'm on the Sean O'Gorman produced, sound is on Liam Mullen, BCO is Daniel Keating, the series producer is Rebecca Meehan, and Ray Darcy's next.
Liveline on RTE Radio 1 with Kia. Going electric? Plug into the Kia e-range of EVs and PHEVs.
Kia. Movement that inspires.
1850 715 815 stays open until 3:15 p.m. or email joe@rte.ie.